to you courtesy of Frank Talk 104.3 FM, as well as worldwide on the internet, courtesy of Liberty Works Radio Network. Tell your friends they can listen to this great network and support it by visiting LWRN.net. That's Liberty Works Radio Network, a network that brings you radio programming you will not hear anywhere else. As always, I ask you to support Liberty Works Radio Network. You can go to LWRN.net and click on the Join Donate button in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage. Given the many blessings God has bestowed on our country, I dedicate every show to our Father in Heaven, so I always start the show by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. You and I both know that our country is in deep trouble, and I urge everyone to fervently pray for God's blessings on our country. Let's redouble our efforts to obey his commandments, especially refraining from taking the Lord's name in vain. I invite you to join my email list by visiting my website at freedomabovefortune.com. You can click on mailing list on the left-hand side of the homepage. You can also go to agentfortruth.com for more information about me and my work, and there's also a way to join the email list there at agentfortruth.com. Briefly, for the benefit of new listeners, I'm a former IRS special agent. I worked in the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. I no longer work for the IRS because during the last 2 years of my service there, I performed an off-duty investigation into claims that the income tax laws do not actually require most Americans to file federal income tax returns and pay federal income tax, and that the IRS was actually deceiving the American public about their true income tax obligations. After gathering and analyzing a great deal of documents and evidence, I concluded that these claims about the federal income tax system were largely true. And when I asked my IRS supervisors to discuss my conclusions with me, they not only refused to have any discussions with me, but they also encouraged me to resign from my position at the IRS. So my IRS career came to an end rather abruptly in 1999, when I did in fact resign from the Internal Revenue Service, and I've been speaking about my experiences and conclusions regarding the federal income tax and other constitutional liberty-related matters ever since. I'm featured in a film called America, Freedom to Fascism. The film takes a provocative look at the Federal Reserve and federal income tax systems, and I highly recommend that you watch the film as soon as possible. If you've already watched the film, be sure to recommend it to others. You can type in the words America, Freedom to Fascism into any search engine and watch the movie for free, or you can order copies at freedomtofascism.com. And fascism is F-A-S-C-I-S-M, freedomtofascism.com. My guest for the rest of this first hour is Dr. Joe Goodwin. I periodically invite Dr. Joe to the show for his insightful commentary and occasional rants. So welcome once again to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show, Dr. Joe.
Well, thank you for having me on, Joseph. I always appreciate a chance to chat with you, and I hope your listeners find it entertaining, maybe even edifying.
I'm pretty sure that'll happen. I'm very, very happy that you could join us. Well, I'm going to start with a kind of a long-winded question here, something to set up the discussion, but being that you're Dr. Joe and not just Joe, I'm sure you can handle it. So here we go.
Doctor is in.
Yeah. So I'd like to start with asking you to compare and contrast the deceitful tactics that are utilized by the IRS in administering and enforcing the federal income tax system to the deceitful tactics that Satan has utilized from the beginning to impede and sever man's relationship with God. How's that?
Woo! Wow. That's quite a philosophical question, but you know, I think it'll be fun to try to tackle it. I doubt very seriously in an hour we could even scratch the surface, though. Well, let's roll up our sleeves and see what we can come up with here. I guess first, with any question, especially of a philosophical or legal nature, the first thing I do is look at the premise. And, of course, the premise is that deceitful tactics are being used. So then it's, you know, by whom? And I think you said by the IRS. From my perspective, I don't really see the IRS as implementing as using, quote-unquote, deceitful tactics as much as I see the Department of Justice and the courts not only using deceitful tactics but engaging in criminal activities, criminal racketeering, to say the least, and repeated patent violations of Section 1983 of Title 18 with respect to deprivation of rights under color of law. That's where I see the major deception going. Certainly the IRS, though, does publish, I hate to call them opinions because they won't ever stand by what they publish, but they have a web posting, for example, that talks about frivolous tax protester arguments, they used to call them, but now that word is fallen in disfavor. Tax defier, I think, is the new word, where they label as frivolous certain arguments that certainly aren't, and what they publish there is false, just flat out false. But that, I believe, is a kind of separate and distinct from the rank and file of the IRS. I think most rank and file IRS employees simply turned a blind eye to their duty and obligation to research the laws they claim to be enforcing, or they presume to be enforcing. And I think this is, I think your question is really kind of important in that this kind of deception, is spiritual in nature. I believe it is satanic, to use the Christian frame of reference, but evil by any standard. Even if you were a agnostic or atheist, it reminds me of Paul's admonition to the Ephesians in Ephesians 2 and 6. I'm going to kind of read them in reverse order because it makes more sense that way, and I'm going to put in a little error of my own, and I want to see what people think of it. In Ephesians 6:12, Paul says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." Then in Ephesians 2:2, he says, "Wherein times past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the airwaves, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience." That passage, those two passages to me are extremely poignant for our day and time, in that this is the first time in history, well, for the last 50, 60 years or so since we've had television and radio. I guess radio goes back farther than that, so forgive my looseness with time frames. But, you know, we've had airwaves where deception can be broadcast over the airwaves. And it's almost as if Paul is looking forward to that. The actual quote leaves out the word waves, you know, according to the prince of the power of the air, he said. But I think if you inserted it, it brings it home to our day and time very, very well. But the other thing that's really telling that I think most Christians miss, and I think people who aren't Christian, you know, and won't even consider the Bible or the scriptures for their prophetic thing. They'll read Nostradamus, but they won't read the prophet. They won't read Elijah or Ezekiel, which I think is a disservice to themselves. But one of the things that Paul's talking about in 6 is he's saying, you know, principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this world, spiritual wickedness in high places. What is he talking about? He's talking about institutions, the institutions of his time, the monarchs and their bureaucrats and so forth. And I think he's making a very, very important distinction there in that, you know, what we would call satanic evil or demonic evil You find it when it's institutionalized, you know, and I look at our times and think that we do indeed live in an evil time, but I don't see humans, the ordinary people, as necessarily any more or less evil, or any greater number of them being more or less evil. I would tend to think that maybe there's less. I mean, as population grows numerically, maybe it's not less, but percentage-wise, I think that humans as a species are making, you know, great attempts to solve things in a more civilized manner, and, you know, there's more people choosing to be peaceful than to be violent. So I don't really see that as changing that much, but I do see our institutions becoming ever more just flat out evil, criminal in their activities. And that's scary, and I think that's what we really need to be worried about, whether or not you're, you know, Christian or any other religion or even atheistic. The idea that the very institutions that form more or less the foundation of our organized society are being co-opted by criminals is a very, very scary thought. And I think that it's very, very present and real, and the evidence is not hard to find. I think all we need to do is look right at the records in the various court cases that in my mind evidence this kind of thing. And we don't need any further proof. We can see the criminal activity right there.
It certainly is an ongoing process. There's another verse that I like from the letters of St. Paul, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7. For the mystery of iniquity is already at work. Only he who now restrains it will do so until he is taken out of the way. And certainly, every time that somebody tries to restrain that mystery of iniquity, the martyrs throughout the centuries, but as people who have battled the secular institutions, they do seem to be taken out of the way often. Of course, our Lord first and foremost, and told us that we shouldn't expect better than he got. But, you know, your points are well taken. There's definitely a long track record, lots of evidence, of an unfolding process, but there always seems to be that centerpiece, right, that always seems to be guiding it ever so intelligently.
Well, I mean, you know, we know for a fact that our cell phones can pick up signals and energy and, basically the cell phone signals that we can't see or touch. Yet we know how to generate and transmit those. But they're not perceivable by our senses. And so the notion of a spiritual realm of, clearly, if you were to look at sort of a graphic image, if you will, of all the radio waves that are circulating around us right now, it would look, I think, extremely chaotic. All kinds of different frequencies going all kinds of different directions, et cetera, et cetera. And it would look probably just like noise. But yet, here we have these little devices that can pick out one tiny stream of a signal that is our phone conversation out of this whole sea of noise. And that entire sea of noise...
Sorry, we got a break coming up, and you're building to a very important point, so I was kind of wondering where I should stop you. But pick us up after the break. Our guest is Dr. Joe Goodwin, and giving us some really great commentary just to make us think. So we'll be right back after these messages.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on LibertyWorks Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It seems these days I'm in a haze and I can't concentrate on things. Can't eat or sleep, feel incomplete and kind of scared and creepy. I look over my shoulder lots and shudder when I watch TV. I bite my nails and cuticles and watch my words very carefully. I bite my lip a lot and fidget with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. Why aren't people shocked or something? Why aren't people up in arms? Does anyone read history or see red flags or hear alarms? The streets are filled with deaf and dumb as I squeak like a mouse. There's a communist living in the White House. You may say, do I have any evidence to support my suppositions? His grandparents were socialists. His mother was. His father was a communist. He had Marxist professors. He taught a course in college on Saul Alinsky. He told Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail, spread the wealth, which is a direct quote from the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. He appointed Van Jones to be his green job czar. Van Jones is a purported communist. His church of 20 years, what with Jeremiah Wright preaching, was black liberation theology, which is actually Marxism. Then as soon as he got in office, he had the government take over the banks and the car industry, and now he's trying to jam down our throats socialized medicine and the cabin trade. I mean, how much more proof do you want? Everybody, there's a communist living in the White House!
To act on the matter of the bat, which has been trapped in this chamber for the past 15 minutes. All those in favor of attempting to capture the bat, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
It's clear that the majority of those present feel we need to act. I therefore propose that we have all the lights in the chambers turned off and all the windows open. The bat will fly towards the sunlight and out the window.
No, Mr. Chairman, I respectfully disagree. The best plan of action is to capture the bat and then release it outside.
Oh! Get out!
Representative McCullough, I believe that catching the bat would prove extremely difficult. It's very fast.
Well, I have read that...
Peeling back the layers every day with Frank Turek. Wall 4, news, sports, and more. The official home of Glenn Beck, Thomas, Alex Jones, Mark Levin, and the hosts of Liberty Works Radio Network.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
She knows a hollow from a double up. She does snapbacks, backsides, shoots the curl. Bethany Hamilton knows everything about surfing. She just didn't know about the shark. But just months after the attack, and with only one arm, the 13-year-old surfs again. And now she's ripping it better than ever. So next time life puts a little fear in you, just think of Bethany Hamilton hanging 10 on top of a heavy wave. That's real courage. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com, where you can learn more about me and what I'm trying to do to make my life worthwhile, do the right thing. And our guest for this hour is Dr. Joe Goodwin. He is a commentator, and I've had him on from time to time. Really, I enjoy his commentary, and I'm certain that you have and will too. Before the break, we had to interrupt Dr. Joe. He's talking about things that aren't perceivable by the senses, and yet I'm sure he may be building towards something we should be paying attention to nevertheless, even though we can't see it, smell it, taste it, etc. Is that basically what you're working towards, Dr. Joe?
I think so, yeah. Absolutely. Where we were was, I mean, you opened with the question, how would I compare the deceit used by the IRS with the deceit used by the adversary or Satan, you know, over the millennia to separate mankind from God? And I was saying, well, I guess first thing you have to do is sort of question the premises. And admittedly, you know, you really can't discuss anything unless at some point you say, okay, for the sake of discussion, we will assume. So obviously, for the sake of this discussion, we're going to assume that that there is an adversary in that context. But what I was leading to was, you know, evidence of that. And I think that, you know, when it comes to deceit, clearly, you know, if you look at the institution, for example, of slavery over the millennia, you know, I mean, it's been almost an ever-present part of man's history. Yet pretty much everybody agrees that it's a really pernicious, evil institution. I heard a really good comment, actually, just the other night. I think it was by Noam Chomsky, who gets blasted by the conservative side often, but he pointed out that, you know, you can have an evil institution, but that doesn't mean that everybody within it is acting in an evil capacity. So, for example, and he used slavery as an example, and I hadn't really thought of it in this context, but he makes a very good point when he says, you know, you can have a person in the 19th century, say, or 18th century Americas, for example, holding slaves, who is not an evil person. They might be a very good person. They might be good to their slaves. But they are still participating in this institution that is evil. And that's the problem with institutions. And I think that if there is a devil or an adversary, he must work through those institutions. I think Paul alludes to this in his letter to the Ephesians, you know, chapter 2, verse 2, and chapter 6, 12. I think that's what he's warning the Christian followers of his time about, is that, look, you committed some little evil. Those kinds of things are evil, to be sure, but they're not demonic. They're not... And if there is an adversary, then that would mean, according to Christian traditions anyway, and many others as well, that he or it has been with us since the dawn of man. And if that is true, this entity, this intellect, whatever you want to call him, is no idiot. He's been, you know, he's had ample time to aggregate to himself or under his control through whatever institutions, corporations, monarchies, who knows, vast wealth, perhaps even the majority of the wealth on the planet. He's had time to master the nuances of mind control and manipulation of entire populations, which is what we see. But then when you look at something like the history of the United States, which is a much shorter microcosm in the total history of mankind, you see an institution, the federal government, born out of this notion that, as Jefferson says, you know, that the governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that, you know, that powers based entirely on government fiat are not just, they're tyranny. But that notion, first of all, it's odd to me that even though clerics and monks had been discussing this in, you know, canon law circles, that is the kernel of human rights, what we refer to as human rights, and it didn't even come to the surface as a political idea or a political force until the American Revolution. It had been completely suppressed up until that time. So we have generation upon generation of humans growing up thinking, you know, slavery and monarchy and so forth, it's just the way it is. And of course, that's natural because we live such short lives. That was the way it was. You know, so here you have this country that's born out of this revolutionary idea, but an inherently just idea. And if you had an intellect or an entity that had vast power and was at work in the world, watching that happen, you can bet there would be, you know, vehicles set in motion to turn that around. And that is exactly what we see with the history of the United States. And what bothers me the most, and where I see the evidence, the physical, real-world evidence of, you, if you will, of the devil or Satan, is in the implementation of agendas in the United States that are destroying our Constitution. And when we talk about the Constitution, I mean, people have to understand that our country, even though our Constitution has been imitated and emulated in many ways, we still remain the only country on the face of the planet. The United States of America's federal Constitution is the only organic governmental formation document that recognizes that human rights, life, liberty, that the right to exist and live your life are granted by a creator. So that to me is equally shocking. Even though they've emulated the Constitution and so many things about it, they haven't quite caught the kernel of what this is all about. I had a really interesting discussion with an atheist one day. I was skiing and we were staying in the same lodge, and we just had one of these chats, you know, and you know, well, I'm an atheist. Well, you know, I'm a Christian, you know, and of course at first you'd think that the fur would come up on our back or whatever, but it was really a very interesting conversation. But I finally got him to admit at least that, you know, God as a notion, as a legal notion, is really essential to the very notion of human rights, in that as soon as you take a creator out of the equation, there are no rights. It's all up for vote, or it's all up for legislative fiat by whoever the monarch du jour is. There are no rights. It's only what rights they tell you you have. So this notion that humans have unalienable rights carries with it the implication that those rights come from something suprahuman, and if, to the extent that we believe those rights are good, they must come from a good source that's superhuman. So what's causing this degradation of our society? What's causing this degradation of our government? You see, for example, in the tax code, how even though it was never intended to apply to the wages of Americans working and living in the 50 states of the Union, that income was always legally defined as some profit earned from capital. So when you go into the marketplace and offer your labor to your employer, that is your capital. And the cost of that capital is what the employer pays you. That is a straight barter. There is no profit there. The value, you know, the value of that labor is what the market will bear, and there's been no capital gain. So, but income is basically what we think of as capital gains, and that's the way it's always been defined, and it still is defined that way. And yet we see prosecutions of Americans. First of all, we see their wages stripped from them, basically the government saying, this is what we'll allow you to keep. And then we see them prosecuted for saying, no, that's mine, you don't have a right to take that. And even though that's what the law says, and you watch how the courts engage in a subterfuge that's very subtle, but basically amounts to this. The court says, you know, we're not going to let you show the jury what the law says. We're not going to let you show the jury the videos, the research papers, the books that you read that led you to the conclusion about what the law says. We're not going to let you do that. So the jury is kept from knowing the truth. The Supreme Court has said this is wrong, but yet courts do this every day, and the Supreme Court then refuses to grant cert when people bring these kinds of issues up on appeal. So how we got from a government of the people, by the people, for the people, with life, liberty, and property as simply enumerated unalienable rights, but many, many other natural rights belonging to us, now coming down to where you can't build a fence on your property without paying a fee to some bureaucrat. Your labor is not your own. Your labor has zero basis. You can't deduct anything before they tax it. And then the courts going out of their way to prevent the people, the jurors, from actually seeing the law itself. And the judge saying, well, I'll tell you that the law says this tax was owed or that tax was owed, without ever citing to the law even. So these kinds of problems to me seem like that agenda, when you look at how the code started out fairly clear, applying to foreigners and, you know, income was well-defined, and then they make an amendment, and all of a sudden now certain language, they haven't changed the source statute, but they've changed the language that appears in the code so that, for example, the word Constitution disappears. There was a very good video, I think the absolute best video for your listeners to see on this subject, and how how there's been a concerted, well-planned effort to disguise what the tax laws actually say, was a video made by a guy named Larkin Rose back about 2002 or 3 called Theft by Deception. He not only walks through the application of the code, but then at the end of the video, the last 20 or 30 minutes, he spends going through the different iterations from 1925 all the way through 1998, and showing how they've rewritten the regulations and rewritten the wording of the code to actually hide its true meaning. But once you see the evidence, it's very, very clear. There's no argument about that. The only argument is whether or not a jury gets to see that. And if they don't, guess what? You're probably going to get convicted. And if they do, guess what? You're probably going to get acquitted, because it's not hard to figure out. You don't need a high school education to understand this stuff, and that's why they're so deathly afraid of people wising up to the fact of what the law really says. Because once the people wake up, I think that there's going to be a lot of judges put on trial for sedition, if not treason. And I don't think it could happen to a greater set of people. Clearly, that's where the buck stops, even if the Department of Justice is corrupt to the core, and I think we're getting close. The judiciary has an obligation to be the check and balance against that, and they have not only utterly failed, they've actually aided and assisted in the violation of constitutional rights against Americans en masse.
Back to those institutions that keep on moving in the direction that Satan wants them to move, but ever so slowly and ever so deceitfully. My name is Joe Bannister, host of the show, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com, and we'll be right back.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
This is Randall Yearout on Leaders. Our government leaders swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States before they're allowed to exercise the powers of their offices. This oath automatically requires those office holders to act as a check on usurped or abused power among those within any branch of the government. Why is it, then, that when the Congress assumes for itself powers reserved by the Constitution to the states or the people, The president doesn't object with the defense of the Constitution and refuse to execute unlawful legislation. Or when the president creates Soviet-style czars to violate the public rights, why doesn't the Congress speak up? Or when the court begins striking down the laws of the Union states in violation of the public rights and in favor of international norms, why don't the other two branches bring misdemeanor charges against those offending judges? It appears that our leaders in government think that a non-intervention policy on another branch's behavior is more virtuous than executing the oath they took to support and defend the Constitution. James Madison said in Federalist Paper 51 that if men were angels, no government would be necessary, and that if angels were our governors, no Constitution would be necessary. Our Constitution is necessary, however, and our public officials are proving to us the very reason this is so. The Constitution outlines the restrictive powers we, the people, gave to our governors. For our leaders to disobey them is to break the supreme law of the land, which is to be dealt with by impeachment and removal from office. I think the only way to effectively ensure the reinstatement of our American form of law and government is to replace nearly every last congressman with one who will honor his oath.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
Liberty Works Radio Network.
The American Dream was given birth by Samuel Adams, the father of the American Revolution. For 40 years, Sam agitated the American colonists to rebel against the British monarchy. His sacrificial effort cost him the entire fortune he inherited from his father. He was captivated by John Locke's theory that the average man was capable of governing himself, that an aristocracy was counterproductive and oppressive, and that the only lawful function of government was the protection of life and property. All else was an obnoxious intrusion into the affairs of the individual. Those who knew Sam and worked closely with him called him the last of the Puritans. He understood that rights come from God. He declared, "The right to freedom, being the gift of God, it is not in the power of man to alienate this gift and voluntarily become a slave."
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
I pledge allegiance to the Constitution of the American States United and to the Republic which it created, implementing God's governmental plan for man and asking his blessing for its observance, which will provide liberty and justice for all. For all. For all. For all.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. It's the last segment of the first hour. Just to let you know that in the second hour, I'm going to have Mark McAfee. He's the CEO of Organic Pastures. Their website is organicpastures.com. That's a raw milk dairy in California. And you will be stunned by the information that Mark is going to bring to your ears. So please stay tuned for the second hour. Meanwhile, our guest for the first hour is Dr. Joe Goodwin. Have him on from time to time for commentary and egging us on to think higher thoughts and think about things we may not have thought about before. And wanted to start maybe back in talking a little bit, well, again, our topic of this deception that has gone on throughout time, but maybe talk a little bit about the mark of the beast. Dr. Joe?
Well, the mark of the beast, to me, is there can be no other culprit other than the Social Security number. And, you know, talking about deception through the millennia, the scriptures make reference to how, you know, evil men creep, you know, in the end times, creep into the church unawares and lead the people astray, kind of a Pied Piper sort of scenario. And I think that the Social Security scheme is certainly the tax, the tax fraud that's being committed by the government is a huge issue, and people need to look into that. It just boggles my mind that people will pay, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes and never even bother to try to figure out what the code says. They just rely on accountants who, for all their training, they're trained in all kinds of great details, accountants and attorneys, pretty much just are taking lessons from the fox guarding the hen house. When you delve into it with an independent study and not guided by somebody who wants you to arrive at a particular conclusion, it can take you a lot of directions. But if you get down to the final analysis, even the code as it's written today still doesn't apply, and nor could it, because even though there's been omissions and so forth to hide its true meaning, there can't be a law passed that actually makes a U.S. citizen liable. But the churches have been, in my opinion, equally derelict in their duty, and if evil men have crept into the church, I think that's happened, and no disrespect to the Catholic Church or, you know, any other church out there per se, but, you know, just the simple notion that, you know, well, pay, you know, what does the Bible say? Well, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Well, that is one phrase taken out of context that is really wholly inapplicable. You know, we can go through a vast number of texts, starting with the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal. If you look at Social Security, it takes from one person by police force, brute force, and gives to another. It's theft. Anything that the government does that would be theft for you to do is still theft. The fact that we give it sanction doesn't necessarily mean it's not. But that's just a starting point. You look at Psalm 3, verse 5 through 8, David is saying, the people should not be numbered. Philippians 4:19, God will supply all your needs. Why are we looking to the government to supply all of our needs? But even so, let's say that we did want to have government provide a safety net. The notion that it would be borne on the back of a few to be paid to the back to be paid into the pockets of another few is wrong. You know, it should be borne on the back of all evenly, and all should be able to acquire it. If there needs to be a means test, okay, maybe we can go down that road. But the way it's implemented is you know, fundamentally evil as well. And then the way it's administered is also evil, in that the government doesn't set that money aside for anything. They spend it, and we know that it's going to be broke. It was a Ponzi scheme from the start. The same year that it was implemented, they put Mr. Ponzi in prison. So they borrowed his idea and imprisoned him. I mean, that's sort of classic diabolical thinking, kind of like the old witch trials where, you know, well, if they think they were innocent, if they, you know, if they float with the millstone around their neck, then they must be, you know, possessed or something. So, you know, we can go on and on. Revelations is full of it. Chapter 13, 6 through 17, chapter 14, 9 through 10, chapter 20, 11 through 15. Time after time we see God telling, first of all in the Old Testament, telling David never to number the people, and then going on and saying, you know, that they'll, you know, once that happens, then that number becomes essentially the mark of the beast. And certainly Social Security has done that. I mean, think about something as simple as identity theft. Identity theft would be absolutely impossible, but for the fact that everybody uses this number, which can then be, stored in databases like the credit, you know, credit reporting agencies and so forth, and it completely depersonalizes the process. I mean, let's think about credit. If I come to you and I want to borrow money, you need to look at my character as part of your analysis of whether or not you want to make the loan. You're going to look at the risk of the venture, and you're going to look at my character and whether or not you can trust me. Well, you know, a credit score seems to replace all of that, and it gives people this false sense of security, when in fact it's the very device by which, A, they're enslaved, and B, their identity can be stolen. If your identity can be stolen, that's really more or less creating sort of a virtual you. It gives credence almost to some of these straw men theories and so forth that are floating around out there. I see how people arrive at those ideas because our individuality, our person, has to a great extent been co-opted and made a commercial commodity. But it's really all by our own sanction. And that sanction is given with the blessing of our pastor saying, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's. And not going into the rest of the story in Matthew where Christ says to Matthew, you know, of whom do the kings of the earth take tribute? Of the children or of the foreigner? Matthew says, well, of the foreigner. And Christ says, well, then get thee down to the lake and, you know, cast your net. You'll find this fish and there'll be a coin in its mouth and give that to the guard for thee and me. And or to the tax collector for thee and me. And what he's saying essentially is that that fish was the St. Peter's fish. It's a Nile carp is another name for it. And all the Assyrians and Babylonians that came through Palestine would they worshipped this god called Dagon, and they would flip a coin to the fish, where we still have wishing wells to this day. They would flip a coin in there. Dagon was a fish god. And these Nile carp, seeing a shiny thing, would eat them. So it was very common to find coins in the mouths of fish. And that's why Peter did it unquestioningly. He didn't even say what. He just went and did it. But the money that they were paying the tax collector was not money from them. They were the children. It was money from the foreigner. And that's the way our tax code is actually set up. But that's not the way it's being implemented. It's being implemented in a manner completely contrary to its original intent. And contrary to what the law says to this day.
And hearkening back to that very, very terrific analysis for people to consider, but then hearkening back to when you were bringing up the Theft by Deception movie, you see that same kind of deception going on, and Larkin, you know, God bless him, you know, he put together this incredible presentation to show how that deceit has worked over a period of, you know, 70 or 80 years, and, you know, really quite fascinating. And so I'd like to bring you back to, you know, what your comment would be as to, okay, Larkin, you know, had it out with the government, and they were able to convict him. However, you know, how does that affect, if at all, what's actually presented, for example, in that film? Because isn't what was presented in that film simply facts? He's showing how the codes and the regulations were written in the 20s, yeah, and the 30s, and on and on and on.
Yeah, that film, in fact, there's two films, and if you have the websites where people can download these, I think it would be great. But there's two films that I think pretty much are irrefutably dead-on accurate. One is Larkin's film, Theft by Deception, and I agree with you in that film, there is no opinion. It is simply an exploration of exactly what the law says and walks you through the law in the very order that it plainly refers to. But Larkin does do something that the average person would have a difficult time doing, and that is he goes back to the the source documents, in other words, the first code, the first statute written, and shows how, you know, how it evolved, and that that evolution, that the original intent and the original laws that created it have not changed. They merely reorganized and then made some amendments and some redactions, but there's no opinion in there. It's fact. And so the fact that they prosecuted him merely goes to show what I was saying earlier, that they convinced a jury that somehow he was engaged in subterfuge, and the only way a jury could reach that conclusion is if they never saw the evidence. They were never allowed to see his actual movie, because it's, you know, anybody with, you don't need to, you don't even need a high school education. It's very simple stuff, and it's laid out so well. The other film that I think is absolutely bar none a must-see for anybody who wants to be informed is Truth Behind the Income Tax by the Save a Patriot Fellowship. And it's a wonderful opening, but it's a fabulous expose. And here again, there's really no opinion in there. There is an opening dialogue, if you will, where he says, you know, the speaker is a guy named Gordon Phillips, and he's saying, you know, truth is a funny thing. Once you hear it, it's kind of hard to unhear it. And humans, most of us, unless our conscience is completely seared, do have a problem with when we hear truth, it kind of resonates. It's a little bit difficult to get rid of. And, you know, Save a Patriot does a wonderful job. It's similar to Lark and Roses. I don't think that they do, I don't think they cover the deception that's been going on that's covered in Theft by Deception as well, but they certainly cover the outline of exactly how this code works, how it's supposed to work, and the problems with the way it's being applied today become self-apparent without them even really having to say that they're a problem. So I highly recommend those two.
We could point out that at least for Theft by Deception, I know I tried it myself. If you go to YouTube and you type in, those with pen and paper, which I always recommend having, if you type in Theft by Deception, 1 of 9, deciphering the federal income tax, if you type that into the search box on YouTube, and the 1 and the 9 are the numerals. They're not spelled out. They're the numerals. You type that into YouTube, Theft by Deception, 1 of 9, deciphering the federal income tax, you can watch, you know, there's 9 parts to it because Google limits how much you can put in each one, or YouTube. So therefore, it takes you a little while to go through them. But, you know, this is the kind of thing you should check it out for yourself and see whether Dr. Joe is correct that we're talking about fact in this film or, you know, opinion. And again, this isn't, I'm sure Dr. Joe would agree, you know, this isn't an invitation to take on the IRS like Larkin did, or get slammed like poor Larkin did, and how they, you know, they try to body slam anybody they can. This is about educating yourself about the truth. And as Scripture says, the truth will make you free. So that's really what we're trying to encourage you to do.
And who knows when you'll be called to sit on a jury? And do you want to sit on a jury just having been spoon-fed what someone else wants you to believe, or do you want to be fully informed? Do you want to be able to stand before your maker and say, you know, I did the best I could to get all of the facts before I condemn somebody to prison?
Right. Well, we got the end of the first hour anyway. Please join us for the second hour. Dr. Joe, thank you so much for being with us on the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. AgentForTruth.com, FreedomAboveFortune.com. See you after the break at the top of the hour.
My pleasure, Joseph. Thank you very much.